If I could get Sean to take the mic first. Thank you very much.
Good morning, you gorgeous patriots. This is absolutely the highlight of my year, every year, when I get to come up here and address you folks. Next year is going to be extra special. This will be in Florida. I don't have to get on an airplane. I get to drive to this. It's going to be great. And we're so happy to have you in Florida for next year. So please come. You know, a lot of people look to Florida for what's coming out in firearms policy throughout the country. Our concealed carry license was the one back in 1987 that wound up being a version of that exported to most of the states. Our self-defense and no duty to retreat or stand your ground law has been exported to so many states. We've long been a leader in gun rights. We've also been a leader in gun control, some of the worst gun control laws that have come out recently, I'm ashamed to say, have gotten by our legislature in Florida, and we were powerless to stop it. It doesn't mean we're giving up. We've had a huge influx of money from the likes of Bloomberg, Al Hoffman, Mike Fernandez, huge Republican donors, giving Republicans money to support some of the worst gun control legislation we have seen in decades. Florida's red flag law provides no due process protections, or at least very limited ones. It's, unfortunately, as Trump said, take the guns now and provide due process later. That is just not how due process works, and we're fighting hard to stop this. It's not all doom and gloom, though. We just won a giant preemption case against the against Broward County. Huge case. That when they were told that you can't have no firearm signs, they said, okay, we're not allowed to have no firearm signs. So they put up no weapons signs. The judge saw right through this. It was a clear attempt to confuse people because, yes, under Florida law, a weapon and a firearm are two different things. The judge saw right through it, and while we have firearms preemption, our Constitution, and he finally understood, our Constitution says that only the legislature may regulate the right to bear arms. So for the first time in Florida, I'm proud to report, local municipalities, not only can they not regulate firearms, they cannot regulate knives, clubs. Doug Ritter, wherever you are back there, the knife rights issue just took a huge win in Florida, and we've got a lot more coming. We've sued the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. FDLE has been doing a lot of illegal things, like when you go to buy a gun, saying, there's an unlimited time that we have to do your background check. Now, Florida law says they have 3 days, 24 working hours, actually. But FDLE decided, no, if they find any kind of a problem in your background, say you had an arrest in 1977 for a misdemeanor, then they can delay you buying a gun forever. We've sued them. Florida law also says if you have they're a point of contact state for your NICS check. Florida law also says if you have a concealed carry license or if you're a law enforcement officer, you don't have to have the fees associated with getting a NICS check, the $5 fee that they charge. Well, they serve over 2 million gun purchases annually, and we have over 2 million concealed carry licensees. We sued them over that. We've had a number of people going to, and I want you to, if you've purchased a firearm in Florida for the past 4 years, I want you to go to fdlelawsuit.com, fill out the questionnaire there, If you're qualified for one of these two cases that we filed against the state, it'll add you as a class action. We're suing for the $5 back for millions of gun purchases over the last 4 years. So $5 at a time, we're going to make this hurt when they try to hurt us. We're bringing it back to them. So, but do not get it confused. It's not about Republicans versus Democrats. It is about people who respect your rights versus people who don't respect your rights. We have a Senate president in Florida who does not respect your rights. He's taken huge money from Bloomberg, Al Hoffman, and Mike Fernandez on the promise of passing more gun control in Florida. So, to Mike Galvano and the legislative leadership in Florida, I have only one thing to say. There's a path back to Jesus, but you better repent. Have a good day.
I'd like to invite Patricia Harold from the Nebraska Firearms Owners Association. And I have been asked to not step behind people because nobody wants to see my face through this entire conference. So I'm going to just shake my charm bracelet from the back row. Just a heads up. I was looking for a cattle prod, but nobody brought one with them. No. But a cattle prod next year. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone. I am Patricia Harold, and I am the president of the Nebraska Firearm Owners, and I am proud to be my first responder. It is an absolute honor to be standing in front of you today to let you know that I am not a traditional gun owner. I did not grow up feeling the need or having any interest in firearms. I escaped from California when I joined the military, and that has been a blessing. And the reason why I'm bringing that up is I want to look around this room and everyone take a look and see the diversity that we have in this organization and across all these different state coalitions and how important that diversity is, but we're missing something. How many of you are under 25? We have one, we have two, we have three. Four? Or, sir, you look really good. Awesome. In Nebraska, we have a tagline called, it's Nebraska, we're not for everyone. And that's true. I don't mind being flyover country. I'm happy with all of you just staying out of my state. Driving through traffic in Arizona here is really an eye-opener. But going back to my point, if we don't enact work to raise the next generation of gun owners and freedom fighters, we will be the last generation to express these freedoms and rights. The last. I see on the news all the time children coming out of their schools to fight for climate change, for fight for this and that, and none of our children are fighting for gun rights that I can see in the media. And so one of our initiatives in Nebraska is to change that. We're starting a coalition for the Second Amendment Next Generation, where we're going to be advocating for instructors to offer training for free to families and young people, to build on all the work of other organizations that have done that to try to inspire gun rights and gun ownership. Well, we're going to really focus on the gun rights portion. It's not just introducing people to responsible firearms ownership and safety and the love and passion for the sport and the ability to defend ourselves, but it's to teach them what they're not learning in schools. That they are independent individuals, sovereign unto themselves and responsible for their own freedoms, and need to be informed and educated and not just listen to social media, Twitter and Instagram, because obviously our channels are getting shut down. How many of you knew that the Second Amendment Foundation Twitter channel was shut down recently, right before our conference? So, We in Nebraska, we have a lot of work to do. We fight in our legislature, which is a unicameral, but we also do not have state preemption. So we also have to fight at the local municipality level, and that's a tougher fight. So whether we have to fight from above or fight from below, we have to raise that next generation because we have to combat the idea that we're a dying breed. Thank you.
Keely?
Good morning, everyone. I'm Keely Hopkins. I'm the state director for the National Rifle Association for Arizona, Oregon, and Washington. I know Arizona's been covered, so I'll focus on the Northwest. With Washington and Oregon at this point, unfortunately, it seems like both of them are in a race to see who can catch up to California's gun laws the fastest. Historically, Washington and Oregon have both had relatively good gun laws. But in the last 4 or 5 years, however, things have changed. We've both lost seats in the legislature, but we've also seen several initiatives filed within the Northwest. So in both of these states, we're seeing anti-gun groups funded by Bloomberg come in and use the initiative petition process to pass what they weren't able to get through in the legislature. In Washington, for example, we've had 3 major initiatives since 2014. It started with the private transfer ban, where you're not allowed to transfer or loan a firearm to another individual without becoming a felon. We also had extreme risk protective orders without due process. And then last year, we had Initiative 1639, which unfortunately did a variety of things. One of it was classifying all semi-automatic rifles as assault rifles, which we know why they do that, so that next year they can come back and ban assault rifles. In Oregon, we're seeing the same thing. We had groups file 2 initiative petitions last year. One was an outright ban on all semi-automatic firearms, and then another was mandatory storage. And the worst part of this is they impose strict liability. So if somebody were to access your firearm if you didn't have it stored locked up, you would be held strictly liable for anything that's done with it. In Oregon right now, both chambers are controlled by a supermajority of Democrats. We also have a very anti-gun governor. We do still have several Democrats that are pro-gun, which has been how we've been able to hold the line. This year, we faced the biggest threat that we've seen so far, which was an omnibus gun control package, Senate Bill 978. This bill had maybe 5-7 provisions in it. It would have legalized age discrimination so that FFLs could refuse to sell firearms to adults under 21. It again had the mandatory storage with strict liability. It also would have required you to report lost or stolen firearms. If you fail to do so, you'd again be held strictly liable for what the criminal does with your firearm. It also would have vastly expanded gun-free zones to include public buildings, colleges, the airports. But interestingly enough, it also included any land that's adjacent to any of these properties, which when you add all of that up, that's a large area that you would no longer be allowed to lawfully carry your firearm. Thankfully, the Senate Republicans refused to pass something that would have made Oregon's law-abiding gun owners become criminals overnight. So they used one of the only tools they had in the superminority, and they did a walkout. By not showing up to the floor sessions, they were able to prevent a quorum so that the Democrats in control couldn't conduct legislative business. So because of this, we were able to hold off, and long story short, no gun control passed this year in Oregon. In Washington, we also had a huge attack on Second Amendment rights. We had hearings on over 25 different anti-gun bills this session. The top bills that we were facing were a ban on standard capacity magazines holding more than 10 rounds, mandatory training and other red tape in order to get your concealed carry license, and also again the expansion of gun-free zones to include libraries, public parks, and even child care centers. We had the Senate Republicans and four Democrats, so we did not have the votes to pass it this year, but it will be carried over to next year. Across the board, though, what has made the difference in the Northwest has been grassroots. We have activists contacting their lawmakers, showing up at hearings, attending town halls, and this has been what has encouraged the legislators to do the right thing and to fight for our Second Amendment rights. Heading into the next legislative session, and especially heading into next year's elections, we have to make sure that we're all continuing to build these pro-gun networks and make sure that we have our voice heard. We can't let Moms Demand Action be the only voice that our legislators are hearing. Thank you very much for your time.
Mark?
The era of a free state. I'm Mark Pennock. I'm from the state of Maryland. I'm the president of Maryland Show Issue. Maryland's motto is the free state, and yet it is the belly of the beast when it comes to gun control. And it is truly true what your prior panelists have told you, is that if it starts in California, it spreads everywhere. And Maryland follows California, and in some respects, leads it in gun control. Maryland has a dubious distinction of being the only red flag law state which within 30 days of its enactment and effectiveness resulted in the death of a gun owner on the hands of the police seeking to enforce a red flag order. It is draconian. But there is hope. In this last legislative session, there was many gun control proposals, and we defeated all of them. And we did so by doing the very grassroots. Thank you. We did so by doing the very grassroots things that you've heard so much about, and that is actually getting out and meeting your legislators face to face. I go across the state of Maryland, and I urge every single owner of a firearm to get to know their representative, not only by name, not only by email, but actually to appear in their district offices. There's nothing more effective. I was a legislative aide to a member of Congress for years in my youth. The thing that makes the difference there is letters from constituents, but presence of constituents, people who actually take the time. Because politicians know that for every person who actually comes before them, there are 10 or 20 or 30 that feel the same way. And the most important thing to a politician is re-election, and re-election is decided on the margins. Your vote matters. Every vote matters. But I wanted to get into something different. I'm a lawyer. I've been a lawyer for 45 years. I spent 33 years in the Department of Justice and 12 years in private practice. So we have a great opportunity coming up this year. The Supreme Court is going to decide a Second Amendment case. If not the New York City case and New York City's absurd restrictions on transport, then another case. There are, at last count, 6 cases before the Supreme Court involving various aspects of gun control. 4 of them have been held into 2 carry cases, one from New Jersey and one from the state of Massachusetts, 2 different circuits. There are others that are pending. We will get a decision this year that will set a new standard of review for Second Amendment litigation. That's critical. Because up to now, the lower federal courts and all the state courts have been using this ridiculous tiers of scrutiny, which is nothing but rational basis in disguise. We have an opportunity, after the Supreme Court decides this next case, to start afresh, because I'm hoping, and I believe, that the court will impose a standard of review that will eliminate the precedential effect of all those decisions. And I urge all of you in this room who, like me, like to litigate. We have Maryland Show Issue has 3 cases pending before the various federal courts of appeals right now, and that we have to be very selective in the cases we now push after the Supreme Court speaks in its next decision. Nothing wins like winning, and nothing's more demoralizing than losing. Be very, very selective in what case you bring before the federal courts. We have a new opportunity that's going to be here this year or next, and we should not fail to take advantage of it. This is how Brown versus Ohio became the law of the land. This is how the civil rights movement prevailed in the federal courts in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s. One case at a time, establishing a narrow win, another narrow win, and soon it became Brown. We have to do the same thing. So I have to tell my members, no, I'm not going to sue Acela for banning firearms on the Acela train that goes from D.C. to Boston. Not that I believe that the policy is great, but because it's not a clean winner. But we have sued in the exercise and to challenge the arrest of two of our members who were peacefully demonstrating on the sidewalks of Annapolis, the state capital. And we've already defeated the motion for a summary judgment on dismissal on qualified immunity. And for those lawyers in the room, you know how hard that is. So that's going to be a winner. We're now in the Fourth Circuit demanding that the seizure of bump stocks without due process, but without compensation under the Fifth Amendment and under very powerful state constitutional provisions was illegal. These kind of decisions are the kind that you can actually bring that starts to undercut what the gun control agenda does. So that I was able to sit in front, and this, I emphasize, you need the lawyer up for this. Because only a lawyer can sit there and tell a committee chairman that your safe storage law directly contradicts this holding in the Supreme Court's decision in Heller, because it imposes the same sort of universal lock it up at all times requirement that the Supreme Court struck down in Heller. That bill was proposed in Maryland. It will be in all your state legislatures soon. It is the agenda of the Giffords and the Bloombergs and the Everytowns. The safe storage bill violates the Supreme Court's decision in Heller. In almost all of its ways written. In Maryland, if it was possible for a person under the age of 18 to obtain access to your firearm, possible, then you had to lock it up at all times. Well, that's directly contrary to what the Supreme Court said. And that bill died in committee. We were able to demonstrate by use of the law that you can't simply command a federal firearms licensee to conduct a background check. He has to take it into his inventory, and if he doesn't, he's violating federal law. You got to know federal law for that. This stuff works. That bill died. So when we were able to demonstrate with facts and statistics that you create a gun zone, and since 1950, 98% of the mass shootings have been in gun zones, the gun-free zones, then the bill that mandated a gun-free zone for every college property anywhere in the state, including thousands of acres of rural property, failed. These are the sort of things that help. These are the sort of things that actually make a difference and actually allowed us to prevail in this last legislative session. But you got to do both. You got to be able to sue. So when you sue, sue carefully. Thank you.
I'm scared to death of this charm bracelet, so I've got a timer. I'm Brian Strauser, chairman of the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus, the state-level gun rights group in Minnesota. And those of you that might know Minnesota, we call it the land of 10,000 lakes. We have about 50 versions of the Lutheran Church, the busiest state fair in the United States, a lot of funny accents. I'm not from there originally, so I don't quite sound like my wife. But we also have the nation's only divided legislature, the only divided state legislature. In the Minnesota House, the Democrats, who we call the DFL, the Democrat Farmer Labor Party, and that's a long story you can find on Wikipedia, they're not the Democrats of 10 years ago, and they have a 20-seat majority over the Republicans right now. This majority is a progressive, anti-gun group who is based in the Twin Cities metro area, who ran on every form of gun control you've heard other panelists talk about this morning. Our governor, former Congressman Tim Walz, who's from rural Minnesota, where Democrats traditionally supported gun rights, until he ran for governor, he was an A-rated, NRA and every other group endorsed individual with a 100% voting record. But he wanted to be governor of Minnesota. So now you would think he'd been a gun control activist his entire 25-year political life. He'll sign any bill that they put up in front of him. In the Minnesota Senate, we have a 2-seat Republican majority. It was 1 seat, but we won a special election and took a seat from an anti-gunner. And you would, I'm sorry, the anti-gun groups looked at this going into 2019 and said, well, Minnesota could be the proving ground for compromise. And they thought that because in 2018, two Republicans signed on to a universal background check bill in the Minnesota Senate that didn't go anywhere. They both pulled their names off of that bill before the end of session because when groups like ours send 10,000 letters to your constituents and you're a family practice doctor and your neighbors and friends come in not because they need help for the medical issue, holding a letter saying, why are you supporting this? You take your name off that bill. But they thought, hey, if we can get two Republicans to flip, I mean, we just did this. And after all, we're the state that elected Jesse Ventura governor. We could do this. Bloomberg's Everytown and the Giffords organization outspent us in the last election, us and the NRA, who spent on some state races, 14-1. They spent about $1.4 million to get that progressive House majority. We spent less, a lot less. So as the legislative session started, they had a strategy, and I'll give them credit, this was unique. They only pushed 2 bills. Universal background checks and the red flag gun violence restraining orders. They didn't introduce anything else they campaigned on. Assault weapons bans, magazine restrictions, licensing, just 2 bills. And they held the line on that for the entire session. Now I'm going to jump to the end of the story about the session because I don't want to talk about the play-by-play. I want to tell you what we did that worked that put a stop to this. I'll tell you that our allies in the state Senate held the line the entire session and didn't cave. In fact, they didn't get a single Republican to support any of their bills in the House or Senate. They did it with no Democrat support, almost no Democrat support from greater Minnesota, from rural Minnesota, because they all voted our way. And the Senate, when the bill came over, the 2 bills came over, they looked at it and they said, wow, that's a pretty looking bill. I'm just going to put it right here on the table and I'm going to look at it for the rest of the year. There were no hearings, there were no committee votes, there was nothing else that happened. So how do we do this? The most important thing we did is we got our grassroots army, our activists, folks like you and I and everyone else that supports gun rights, to come down to the legislature, to show up at hearings, to pressure their legislators, to go to town halls, to ask hard questions, send emails, make phone calls, bring their neighbors, talk with people at their gun clubs, and do the same thing. And we use the platform Voter Voice to do this. You can see that in action at gunowners.mn/action. But I think any of your groups would be able to do something like that. If an anti-gun politician or a gun control activist had a meeting, we had a tracker there, audio, video. We turned that into Facebook memes. We posted their audio. We put their facts, their BS facts, by the way, out where people could see it. So we tried to externalize that as much as we could. Our political director, Rob Dorr, who's our lobbyist, was at the Capitol every single day, whether there was something going on or not, answering questions, helping legislators talk to their constituents, and Rob deserves an enormous amount of credit for winning this victory with us. We hosted a lobby day with more than 800 attendees from across the state. Ironically, and I don't think he planned this, the main Senate anti-gun senator introduced his gun control bill that day, had a press conference. As he was walking out, we walked in. We had our own press conference about his bill. So even before his message got going, we countered that with facts and were able to push that forward. We also worked a lot on new media, so things like using Facebook Live, using YouTube Live, and related things to get to those younger folks that we want to have at the table for this. But most importantly, we won this because our allies held the line and our grassroots army forced them and helped them and had their backs when they did. Thank you.
Good morning. My name's Don Turner. I'm the president of the Nevada Firearms Coalition. I'm a refugee from Arizona, and I see a lot of familiar faces here. When I lived here, we called Arizona the Copper State and Nevada the Silver State. But as far as my friends in Arizona are concerned, Nevada is now the Sandbag State because there's a cancer growing from the West Coast spreading east. And that cancer is, word for word, gun control laws in every state. What you see happen in Washington, Oregon, and California, the exact same laws with the exact same wording are being proposed at our legislature. Now, I remember reading Sun Tzu, who said that it takes tactics and strategy to win a war, but tactics without strategy is the first round of defeat. And my concern about the gun groups is we focus on tactics and not on strategy. And I think what Mr. Patterson said about treating them like bullies is a strategy. We need to remember that. It's not about doing stuff. It's about doing the right stuff at the right time and the right place with the right energy. So, Nevada is a small state, population less than 4 million. Clark County dominates Nevada. Clark County also includes Las Vegas, and I have to say this so I can tax write my trip. Please come to Las Vegas and gamble, because I don't have to pay state income taxes if you do. So thank you. And they don't pay the light bill in Las Vegas what they pay out to the winners, just in case you're hoping to get lucky. So in Nevada, Clark County rules it. But when you look at what rules Clark County, it's the Culinary and the SEIU Union, okay? So if we have to turn Clark County around, we have to do something to get to the SEIU Union and the Culinary Union. So what did we do? The Firearms Coalition in April of 2017 started a women's shooting program. It's every week with women coaches, women instructors, and it's 100% absolutely free. The first night, we trained 300 ladies and turned 600 away. Since April of 2017, we are 54 ladies short of 3,000 having taken the class. Thank you. But the good news of this is majority of them are SEIU and Culinary Union members. Now we have good news from Nevada in that the legislature meets every other year. Like Will Rogers says, the public is safe when the legislature is not meeting. So we get a break every other year. The bad news is this last year, Nevada turned blue. They're one vote away from having a supermajority in the state legislature. So a couple of years ago, they tried to pass a background check bill. It was vetoed by the governor. Then we had the October 1st shooting, and this legislative session was the first session since the October 1st shooting. The Bloomberg spent $22 million to get a background check initiative passed through a ballot initiative. What they failed to do and what they always fail to do is think ahead, and they use the exact same wording for the background check that they did for other states. But Nevada is one of 13 states where the background check does not go to the federal government. It goes to the state DPS first. The state DPS goes to the federal government. So the background check bill said all background checks go to the federal government. The courts ruled that the initiative is invalid. It couldn't be enforced. So the first day of this legislature, the first day, they had a joint assembly and Senate hearing on the background check initiative on Monday. Over 500 gun owners showed up to protest. It was the longest session hearing in Nevada history. It took 9 hours. And that scared them. They had proposed 9 gun bills, and they dropped most of them after that hearing. However, on Wednesday, they had a joint hearing in both houses, and on Friday, the governor signed the bill. So in 1 week, they rammed through Bloomberg's check. During that hearing, every town, Moms Demand Action, Prosecutors for Gun Safety, Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence, Gifford Center, and the Center for American Progress, which was a George Soros group, all testified. All right? So Bloomberg spent over $1.6 million direct donations to the Nevada Democratic Party this last session. So after they got that done, the next thing they did was they introduced an omnibus bill that included bump stocks, mandatory storage, red flag laws. It passed. But we use the same system Arizona CDL does. In the back, besides getting 500 people to the background check bill, 79% of the people voted their opposition to it on the legislative webpage. We had two rallies. And when it came to the other bill, we had 93% of the public voted against it. We generated 1,100 phone calls to the governor to donate it. And we generated 168,000 letters to legislature saying, don't vote for this bill. So our grassroots is tremendous. And we were able to block their biggest piece of legislation was they wanted to do with away with state preemption. They wanted every city, county, and town in Nevada to make up their own gun laws. They've already said that's on their agenda for next time. So what's the lesson we learned? We learned that we're being overwhelmed with out-of-state money, and if Arizona isn't the sandbag for California, if Nevada's not the sandbag for California, folks in Arizona, you're next. So thank you, and I appreciate your time.